We love supporting and promoting the creators of musical theater throughout the world, and we would love to have your support as well. Go to musicaltheaterradio.com and click on the Become a Patron button, because a supportive community is a strong community. Welcome back to another episode of Be Our Guest here on Musical Theater Radio. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Yovanoff. At the end of many of my interviews, I ask the guest if there is someone in musical theater that has had a great influence on you. And the most popular answer by quite a bit is Stephen Sondheim. We lost this incredible artist in 2021, but the legend of musical theater will never be forgotten. And today's guest has had a unique insight into the man via the magazine, The Sondheim Review. Today, we will be speaking with Paul Celsini about his book, Sondheim and Me, Revealing a Musical Genius. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so delighted to be here and talk to your guests.
Perfect. Perfect. So before we get into the book, we always want to get to know you a little bit. So could we get a 30-second bio? So who is Paul in 30 seconds?
Oh, in 30 seconds. Wow. Okay. All right. I was born in Upper Michigan. I live in Milwaukee. I went to Marquette University in journalism. I worked for the Milwaukee newspaper for 37 years. So I'm a journalist. I also write retirement, I started writing fiction, especially fiction set in Tuscany, the land of my roots. And in 1994, I established the Sondheim Review, and now we're going to talk about that.
Perfect. Now, were you always in a musical theater growing up, or is that something you discovered later?
It was. As I said, I lived in Upper Michigan and a little teeny town, and there wasn't much to do. And I discovered musical theater by listening to the original cast album of South Pacific in 1947, I think it was. And it struck me that it wasn't it amazing that I could be in this little town and hear the voices of stars in New York, and becoming aware of the musical theater there. And then that just grew and grew and grew.
Perfect. So you mentioned you were a journalist. So what was that moment that you wanted to create this magazine?
It was a journalistic moment, actually. I was fascinated with Stephen Sondheim's works, and I began a very large collection, embarrassing large collection of books and tapes and CDs and articles. And I had all this stuff. I mean, it filled file drawers. And I thought briefly about writing a book because at that point, this was in the 1970s and 80s, there hadn't been a book about Sondheim. And I thought, well, I'll write a book. But then I realized that I did not have the time. I did not have the resources. I was working full time. I had a family. I just could not do a book. And so I put that idea aside. And then later, I am a big fan of Kurt Weill's works as well as Sondheim's. And the Kurt Weill Foundation in New York publishes a twice a year newsletter about his works that includes essays and reviews and articles and interviews. It's really, really very, very good publication. And I thought, well, if Kurt Weill, who's dead, could have a newsletter, why couldn't Stephen Sondheim, who at that point was the greatest composer, lyricist working ever? And so I thought I'd do a newsletter as well. I'd done newsletters for other organizations. And then the more I thought of it, I thought, well, let's do more than a newsletter. Let's do a magazine. I can't believe I had the chutzpah to establish single-handedly, virtually, a magazine about the works of Stephen Sondheim. But I did. And that it happened.
That's incredible, because considering when you did it, it's hard enough to do it now, and you have all the resources online. You can make magazines, you can do everything. But like, how difficult it was it? We're talking pre-internet time, right? So how difficult was it to get the magazine going and creating it and getting it published and all that fun stuff?
Well, during the years of my collecting material, I had established contacts with another of other like-minded Sondheim people, especially writers. And I was actually the United States correspondent for the Stephen Sondheim Society in London. And that gave me an in to various people. And so I drew on them for writers. I found a business manager in Chicago to take care of the circulation and advertising, such as it was. And I found a designer in Milwaukee, and I found a printer in Milwaukee. So this was I started in January of 1994, and our first issue was in June of 1994. So it really came together pretty fast.
Yeah. Wow. And it's so you decided to put it together in 94. How long did it run for, the magazine itself?
Well, the magazine itself ran until 2016. I had it for 10 years, 2004, and then my assistant took it over for the remainder of the time. Unfortunately, it folded in 2016. There was an online version for about a year, and that died as well. So, unfortunately, there is no Sondheim Review anymore, and the issues are, I think, are pretty much collector's items, because we didn't pr we certainly didn't overprint over our magazines. So you occasionally find them on eBay, but and they're in libraries, but otherwise they're pretty hard to find. And I even had a hard time managing to get a complete set
Really?
of my issues, but I do now. Thank you. Thank
Nice,
you.
nice. So what was the impetus, I guess, to start this book, the Sondheim and Me book?
The book started because after Sondheim died, I hadn't been really connected with Sondheim too much. After I left the magazine in 2004, I had begun I'd gone down another path, which, as I said, was writing fiction set in Tuscany. And so when Sondheim died, I started thinking about those years and what had happened and our relationship during that time. And I dug out the notes that Sondheim had given me, had sent me. I dug out the notes that I had taken from our phone conversations. And I dug out the magazines themselves, and went through them and thought, oh, I remember that. And I remember the author doing that. And that was a pretty good story. And maybe sometimes I thought, well, maybe we could have done something different here. So it was really fun to go through the magazines. And fortunately, and this is, I can't believe this happened. Fortunately, I had everything in my files, every article was in a little folder in my on my computer. So it was pretty easy to rescue them from my computer and start writing the book. I just found the articles in the paper magazine, and then found the articles on my computer and put the thing together. And it wasn't as much work as it might seem, but it was very for I was very satisfying in going through the magazines and finding really some very impressive work, not so much by me, but by the writers, some wonderful essays and some wonderful interviews that we had that really were groundbreaking. And I thought the readers would be interested in that. And I said, this is a book. So that's how the book happened.
Nice. It must have been incredible to go through the memory lane of going through all of these articles and the memories that they brought back of the situations and talking to him and putting
Yes.
it together.
Yeah, it was. It really was. And I remember our conversations, and unfortunately, I didn't save the tapes. I didn't tape everything that we did. I took notes, and I had those, but I also had his notes, which I think were pretty revealing about the man and the way he was so precise and wanted everything to be so accurate about his work. And that's what I think will impress the readers of the book, and reveal something about Sondheim himself.
I agree. Reading the book, it was so interesting how he read everything and pointed out every little thing or big thing or just I would never remember half the stuff that he remembered about
Yeah.
what he had to correct.
Right. Right. It was really something. I'll just read the first issue. I mean, he was very congratulatory about the issue, and after the first issue, he wrote a very long letter, and I'll just read you the first paragraph of it.
Please.
The magazine looks classy, and the articles are literate, accurate. Parentheses for the most part, parentheses, and not too hagiographic, dash, congratulations. A few corrections and elucidations, however, and then he goes on with the elucidations and corrections, which aren't that nobody else would know the difference, but there it was, and how he viewed the magazine. Because he thought it was going to be used by scholars, by research, and he wanted everything to be accurate. That was revealing.
Yeah, and I don't blame him. I would want it to be accurate too. So
Sure,
that's
of
very
course,
cool.
I understood that.
So when you were working on the book, was there a part that you had difficulty writing, be it because of the memories it brought back, or just recalling moments, or is there something writing this book,
Well, I think the difficult part was the time when he became so upset with a review that we had run about the London production of Passion. Passion opened in New York in 1994, or just our first issue was devoted to that. And in 1996, it opened in London, and our reviewer had done what I thought was a very objective review, and pointed out some problems with it. And the reviewer had also reviewed Little Night Music and Company earlier in London, so I was very satisfied with the reviewer's work. And so I was really surprised when he called me. We had talked on the phone before, and it was always very pleasant. But this time, he just went right in, complaining. Why did you run that? It took me aback, and I could not get a word in edgewise. And it really was, I hate to say this, it really was a rant. As a journalist and as working for the paper, I had dealt with irate sources, who didn't like what we ran in the newspaper and complained about the reporter and what and the reporter may got some things wrong, and I had to explain and defend the reporter and go on and on, and so I was used to that kind of thing, but this was different. This was a very personal attack on the reviewer, and I don't know if he knew the reviewer's work beforehand, but it was a very personal attack on the person. So finally he hung up, and so I wrote him a letter explaining that the reviewer was well qualified. The reviewer had seen the production in New York twice, and knew the show, and And actually, he had talked to the director about ways to improve it. And before he got the letter, my letter, he wrote me a note that libeled the reviewer. I mean, it was really, he said, in effect, he said the reviewer made stuff up. Well, that's libelous. As a journalist, I know that's libelous, and I could not publish that. We published his other notes, but not, I couldn't publish that. So, and then he called again. This went on for weeks. And so it was a very unpleasant time. I wrote a couple more times explaining. And so it was a very difficult time. But then he dropped it, just dropped it and never brought it up again. And I still am baffled by the whole thing, how he got so upset about something that I thought was pretty innocuous. And but then he, as I said, he dropped it, and that was it. And we resumed the relationship that we had before that. And so it was hard to write that in the book, because I didn't want the book to be laudatory. I didn't want it to be journalism, just like the magazine was, and just to but I had to report this, and so that chapter was hard to write. I went over it many, many times, and made sure that everything was accurate, and just reported what happened.
You must have had so much material to work with, and just to whittle it down to your book. Is there anything that you left out that you kind of wanted, is sitting on the edge that didn't quite make it in, but would love to if
Sorry.
the book was a little longer?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand.
Is there anything that you left out of the book, because you have so much material, right, to work with, that it didn't quite make it in? If your book was a little bit longer, you would have put it in.
I think what I could have would have done is expand some of the sections. I regret now, well, I don't regret, because there had to be some time limit, some space limit. But the interviews, for example, with the stars of A Little Night Music, I interviewed the original stars on the 25th anniversary of Night Music: Clarence Johns, Glenn Carew, Lawrence of Qatar, and Patricia Elliott. And they were all so gracious and wonderful. And it would have been wonderful to include longer excerpts from their interviews. Also, I would have been grateful to do more with the interview I had with Maren Massey, especially since she died a couple of years ago. And she was such a lovely, lovely person. We had lunch in a restaurant in Midtown Manhattan, and she was just so gracious and beautiful. And I didn't know if I could get that across in the book. So there are some things that I think I would have expanded on if I had more space to do it in.
Yeah, just bringing up the interviews, like there's so many incredibly talented people that talk in the book and sing the praises of Sondheim and his works, and all of them are totally legit what they say. Is there someone who stuck out for you as a pure pleasure to speak with? I know you already mentioned one, but is there anybody else that it was just a pleasure and a pure pleasure to speak with?
Len Cario was so gracious, and so he starred in two such different roles. He starred in Little Night Music as Frederick, and then he was Sweeney Todd. And to talk about the differences in those characters and how he approached the characters was so interesting to me, that how an actor works and gets involved in the soul of the characters that he or she is portraying. And he was really, really wonderful. In fact, I don't have much contact anymore, of course, it's been so long. But we did talk on Mr. Cario and I did talk on the phone recently, and that was wonderful. He's still acting. He's in a television show, and I'm so impressed by him, and how he approaches the characters.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So now that you've written this book and you did the review, I'm curious if you could do this concept again with another musical theater creator, who might that be? You know, could it be somebody from the past or the present? You know, who might be the next the blank review about? Who would you be interested if you were going to do it again?
Well, as I said, I'm fascinated by Kurt Weill, and but there is that the newsletter that the Kurt Weill Foundation puts out, which is really good. But I can't read enough about Kurt Weill either, and it's been a while since he died, 1950, so there isn't much new stuff about him. It's what is new is the scholarly examination of his work. And which is above my head, and I couldn't approach that kind of writing. I love to read stories about Lady in the Dark, for example, or Lost in the Stars, or my very favorite Kurt Weill musical is Love Life, which nobody produces anymore, and it's just a very charming concept musical, probably the first of concept musical, and I can't get enough of reading about that production. So that would be my next project if I could, but I won't do that.
You seem to have an affinity for cr creators and artists that think are just, think outside that box and create the new concept. Because Kurt Weill, what he created was so unique and different too, and then Sondheim as well.
Yes, it was. And I think there's some relationship between their approaches to musicals and how they both explore different ways of telling a story. And that's what they both did. And I think Sondheim especially was so concerned with telling the story. And that's what they and he said that. That's what he was doing all the time. And such wonderful stories he told, and the way he told them was just amazing. And people will be looking at that for many years to come.
Is there one memory from your conversations that will always stick out, from your conversations, either letter or on the phone?
Well, during this whole 10 years that I was editing the Sondheim Review, he was working on this project about the Meisner brothers, and it started off as a show called Wise Guys, and then it turned into Bounce, and then it finally ended up as Roadshow, and it was just an evolving show all during those 10 years. I mean, it couldn't have coincided more with my term as editor of the Sondheim Review. So we at the very beginning, when he first announced the show, we reported on that. And then we reported on every iteration of the show and the changes. And it was so interesting to hear him talk about the show, because he'd get on the phone and he would talk about the changes that were being made and the improvements were being made, and how he and John Weidman were working together. Weidman was writing the book. And making the changes and evolving the story and putting new songs in and taking some out and changing the order and all these things. And what was so interesting to me was the way he would get so excited about this show. It was not getting good reviews. In fact, they're getting very negative reviews, and people wondering what in the world was he doing with this. But he was so, even to the very end of the final production of the show, he was so excited. And it reminded me so much of George in Sunday in the Park with George. He had to finish the hat, in effect. He had to finish the work that he was doing. And he was so proud of what he was doing. And it didn't matter what anybody else thought, didn't matter what else was going on. He had to finish this hat, And I would be smiling as he was talking about the work and the changes that he was making because he was so excited about it. And that was Sondheim. He was so involved in whatever he was doing, writing.
Paul, congratulations on the book. It is a fascinating read to get into the mind of
Thank you.
Stephen Sondheim. And if you're a Sondheim fan or even not, this would be a great read just to understand him better. So, Paul, where can people find the book?
Where can they find it? It's in bookstores and on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. And it's just out there, and it's been getting very nice reception. And we've been promoting it on a lot of places, including here. And I'm very grateful for you asking me to be on the show. I want to point out one thing about the book that readers might not know before they purchase it or pick it up. When I first when early on in the writing of it, I asked my publisher, and it's a very small publisher, but my publisher is very imaginative. And I said, wouldn't it be nice if we had 10 or 12 pages of photos in the middle of this book? And he right away said, no, we're doing 64. And which threw me. And so indeed, in the middle of this book is 64 pages of ex of material from the Sondheim Review, photos and Sondheim's notes, which are, they're all there. Covers of the magazine, posters, Hirschfeld's, Sondheim did a crossword puzzle, an extremely difficult crossword puzzles, and we printed one of those in our anniversary every year. So there's one of those. So it's really I hate to use the word unique because not many things are, but this is a unique addition to the book. And there's also, again, according to the publisher, a chronology of Sondheim's life from birth until that to tragic death on November 26, 2021.
Well, people should definitely check it out. So, Paul,
Thank you.
thank you for coming on today and talking to me and introducing our viewers. If they did not know about it, our listeners, not viewers, listeners, we're on the radio, about the book.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
No problem. All right. We were just speaking with Paul Sosiany about his book, Sondheim and Me, Revealing a Musical Genius. Tune in next week as we'll speak with another guest or guests about their life, love, and passion that is musical theater. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Jovanoff. And until next time, I'll see you when I see you.